I mean, you got to give credit to Houston. They pitch very well. They moved the ball. They located the spots, and so you got to give them credit. And yeah, from our point of view, from our offense, I would say I got to do a way better job to be on base and to make things happen. And I think once I do that, I think the offense is going to continue to get better. I feel like the guys had quality at bats the whole entire weekend.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, March the 30th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, some great content over there for less than a cup of coffee a month, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, I have to tell you, the baseball season, we're now three games into 162 games. One of these rare Sunday off days. How weird. Here I am, 1:55. I come to you as I'm recording this on a Sunday. No Mets baseball. It's a weird feeling, but a good opportunity to come to you after the Mets open up in Houston, a little bit disappointing. There is some good to talk about, a lot of things that already are creating some concerns and some overreactions, and of course the media doing what the media does when it comes to the narrative. But I have to tell you, the way that they started the baseball season, and forget about the whole Korea thing, and you had the Dodgers and the Cubs in Korea. I understand that, you know, eventually the Mets will probably do one of those things, whether it be Korea, Mexico, wherever they start the season, the way they're going to try to grow the game globally, like the other sports have done such a great job, baseball a little bit behind in that. But you have this Thursday in March, in the middle of March Madness, spring training ends literally like a day or two before. Like you get like a spring training game against the Yankees, and then the next day is an off day, and then the season starts. It's the equivalent of throwing you like into the pool, cold pool, just like pushing you in there. It's all right, there you go, swim, with no easing into the season. So to me, that's just, I'm not complaining. I guess it is what it is, but it's a weird feeling because it's similar to like anything else. There's a warm-up, and that's why we call it the getting to know you phase, because even as a fan, as a viewer, as somebody who does what I do, you got to kind of like build this up like a marathon, and it feels like it was just thrown on you. So a weird feeling talking about regular season baseball, but yes, the series in Houston, the Mets losing 2 out of 3 did count. We are underway here in the 2025 baseball season, and look, I'm going to tell you off the bat, I know this is going to annoy you, and you're probably already tired of it, and I see the tweets and all the other things that come to me about the media talking about Soto, the Yankee content creators talking about Soto, everybody talking about Soto and what Soto hasn't done and how Soto needs Judge. And here's Aaron Judge, an historic 3-home run performance in what was a slow pitch softball game at Yankee Stadium yesterday afternoon. And he's talking about Juan Soto. And I think that will die down. Honestly, it probably won't completely die down until the Mets play the Yankees at least once. And you might have to be dealing with this Soto situation all year. Yankee fans, specifically Yankee content creators, are going to say he wants to be with the Yankees. And it was, you know, we addressed this over at Beyond the Mic, the Cohen piece with SI and Tom Verducci, and how Soto came out and said basically the Yankees were the front runners going to the offseason, but the Mets stole them. So there's always going to be that whole part of the situation. We had talked about last week when we were leading into the season that Soto and Soto's career beginning with the Mets was going to be a thing. Every big hitter has gone through this early baptism by fire, whether it be the fans booing, the media scrutinizing, everybody talking about how he was better than with the other team than he has been with the Mets. Obviously has a chance against one of the best closers in the game on Thursday, and Josh Hader strikes out, uncharacteristically chasing a pitch last night, was a little bit more patient. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's part of being a big contract superstar here in New York, coming to the Mets. And really, it started probably when Bobby Bonilla signed the contract and some of the struggles he had. Before then, I know there were big acquisitions, Hernandez, Carter, so on and so forth. But really, the whole baptism by fire, free agent scrutiny, started with Bobby Bonilla. Then you had Mike Piazza. Then you had Carlos Beltran. You know, you had Robbie Cano to a certain extent at some point a couple of years ago. Francisco Lindor went through his own baptism by fire. On and on and on and on and on. It's just part of the deal. It's part of being in New York. Soto's going to go through it. Soto is a top 10 offensive player in the history of baseball in a weekend where he didn't really do as well as you would expect. Not as well as you would expect is an OPS well over 1,000, a home run, a couple of RBIs, working counts, pitchers working around them. And this idea that Soto needs Judge to be Soto. Well, first of all, if you say that, you weren't paying attention to who this guy was in D.C. at all, or San Diego. He's been a great hitter everywhere he goes. Maybe he had the 21 intentional walks, the most of his career, with Soto behind him. You know, that went down. You know, sometimes he gets all these intentional walks with Soto. He didn't have, with Judge, he didn't have those intentional walks. But he's still going to be walked here. I mean, he's going to be like basically, you know, probably the judge of this lineup. He'll get walked a little bit more. We know that. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on, you know, Alonso and Vientos and some of the other guys. We know that. And whether you have Judge in the lineup or not, Soto is going to be Soto. How the rest of the lineup capitalizes on that, that remains to be seen. And look, we'll go right into the negative of the weekend. Okay? So this idea that's, like I said, Soto needs Judge. The only thing that's going to change is maybe walks a lot more. Certainly not going to get, maybe get more intentional walks than he did certainly last year with Judge behind him. You're not going to walk Soto to get the Judge. You might unintentionally walk him, but you know the deal. So when you saw this weekend with the offense, Lindor not much. Vientos had a hit on Friday, big hit on Friday. Not much the rest of the weekend. Lined out to end the game last night. Alonso hit a couple of balls well, but really didn't come up very big. And Nimmo, you know, okay. You know, like, again, most of the production from the part of the lineup that you would expect to support Soto happened on Friday. And they were a little bit fortunate because Houston botched down a stolen base situation with Nimmo. So I already got emails, people saying the Mets are 30th in offense, they can't hit, there they go. And you heard Lindor. It's not like they went in and they faced you know, the 62 Mets pitching staff this weekend. I'm very disappointed about how they were shut down. I thought yesterday they would maybe able to get something going against a kid who had some walks to his name throughout his minor league career. They only got one hit. Remember something, Houston, you know, not a bad offensive team, always has been able to maximize their bullpen arms, has always been able to find good arms. And let's face it, the Mets faced 9 of the 27 innings, a third of the innings that they played this weekend. They faced Josh Hader and Framber Valdez. That's not chopped liver. Not chopped liver. So are you surprised? A little bit. You would expect maybe a better performance. Certainly, if you're going to compete and win a division or make the playoffs and make a deep run, you have to go on to the road against tough teams and be able to find ways to win. The offense didn't do that. Am I ready to be concerned? No, but let's face it. The offense looked very similar, even with Soto, to what it looked like last year, where it'll put a crooked number up, and maybe you get one or two shots of the crooked number, maybe a three-run inning or two-run inning, and then that's it. It's not a bully offense, and you would think maybe a little bit with Soto in the lineup, lengthening the lineup, Mendoza has talked about that, that maybe you'd get a little bit more of that. But let's face it, when you look at the bottom third, you know, Luis Torrens, who I think is a huge asset behind the plate with his arm. I mean, the Astros hardly even ran, and when they did, he was gunning them down. But not a great hitter. We'll see. You know, he had a couple of hits this weekend. We know what Jose Siri, even though he was dynamic on the base paths last night, we know he's not a consistent hitter. He's a guy who's going to pop a home run every once in a while. And Brett Beatty looked like, unfortunately, what Brett Beatty has been throughout his big league career. He really did. Now, you have McNeil on the way. You could always maybe sprinkle in a little Tyrone Taylor when you want to inject some offense. I haven't even gotten into Jesse Winker and Starling Marte, which are the old school platoon DH, where you hope to get enough. So, at the end of the day, maybe without McNeil, I think McNeil of the second half is who you get. Well, you get some kind of version of Beatty from spring training. I'm not expecting 1,000 OPS, but a much better version than what we've seen offensively. We'll see now that the bell has rung. That should be a lineup that is a little bit longer than we've seen, even going all the way back to 2022, when a very similar type of Mets lineup, which would put up crooked numbers, maybe manufacture some runs, but was not a bully lineup. So I'm not concerned about that. This whole idea that Soto is going to be compromised because of Judge, I get it to a certain degree with the walks. Maybe he'll get some less pitches to hit. But it's going to be a golden opportunity for Pete Alonso. And then that is really going to be a conversation, and it's way too early for that. And look, we're not going to see trends for at least a couple of weeks, 20 games or so. And as you know, we wait till like about Memorial Day-ish, end of May, before we start to say, okay, these are where certain situations are going. But this is a golden opportunity for Pete Alonso. He's probably, if Soto is going to get pitched around, he's going to hit with runners on base. He's going to have a chance to get back that at 110, 120 RBI situation that we've seen in the past. And potentially he's going to be able to opt out and get his money. I mean, he's basically playing for a long-term contract. And the early returns, obviously, in Houston aren't great. I thought he and a couple of the Mets hit the balls. The balls they did hit went to the wrong part of ballpark in Houston, that spacious center field. You want to hit it down the line like Soto did, like Jeremy Peña did last night. So I don't think you should be worried about the offense. I think it's a matter of, hey, let's take a step back and see. However, it is clear that this lineup cannot afford a compromised Brandon Nimmo, which I know health has been a bit of an issue, and it cannot afford, even with Soto now in tow, it cannot afford Pete Alonso to be anything. I mean, the floor is what you saw last year, and that wasn't really great. Anything less than that would be disastrous. And, you know, clearly they're putting a lot of stock into Mark Vientos, and Mark Vientos continuing to evolve. And I thought his at-bat in the ninth inning as Hader was just B-A-B-I-P bad luck. I mean, that, you know, a couple of feet either way, that's a base hit. Mets tie the game. And maybe we're having a different conversation today. Now, that's the, you know, early concerning signs. We're not going to go crazy here. I don't want to hear anybody who's emailing me upset about the offense, citing statistics about the offense, looking at the Yankees 20 runs without Soto and saying they're better off. Like, anything you say, and I tweeted about this, and I mean this respectfully. One, you got to get a life. You're way too intense about this. And number two, maybe you should take a break on baseball until August. Really. That's kind of where we're at here at this point. Now, on a very, maybe a little surprising side, but a positive side, I thought the defense was really good. Acuna making a big play, and very much so with McNeil, and I would assume he'll be back within 30 days or so with the oblique. When McNeil comes back, it's truly going to come down to Beatty and Acuna. And I've said over and over, I'm not as much of a believer of Acuna as an everyday player. But I am a believer of Acuna being a 250, 300 bat around the diamond guy, and certainly a guy with a glove that may be able to come in and play a very important up-the-middle position at second and play some good defense. In a lot of ways, his game-changing play on Friday was, for the Mets, I mean, who could have easily gotten swept this weekend with, you know, a couple of bad bounces in the late on Friday. That was a big play. And I thought the other really big positive, and I'm not looking at anything but the eye test here, I thought Mark Vientos continues to show really good defensive progress at third base in the early part of the game. I don't know if it was the first inning or the second inning. He made a diving stop on a ball that looked to be a double. Might have been Altuve to start the game on Saturday night. And I got to tell you, almost got him. I mean, he throws from his back. I mean, he's got a tremendously strong arm. And if you remember last year, they would routinely sub him out for Iglesias late in the ball game. And Iglesias had great hands at third. He was a good third baseman. But here, especially needing his bat, especially how important, and we talk about the offense, and we talk about having a lengthier lineup with Soto, putting Vientos now as the fifth really good hitter, where the Mets really last year had Lindor, Nimmo, Pete. And you had to kind of figure, I mean, obviously Vientos came later on. But, you know, you've added, basically, Vientos is who you think he is. And then he had the defense. You're now, you know, really elite, potentially, five deep. That makes a big difference. And then it puts Winker and Starling Marte more of a component situation. And then you have your bottom of the lineup. And then eventually when Alvarez gets back, maybe you could have him with a very serious injury figure out himself and not rely as much on his bat as maybe last year you were potentially relying on him and what have you. So I thought that that was a really positive thing at that point and what have you. But to me, the big story out of the weekend was, and I know everybody's talking about the bullpen. The bullpen did an excellent job. There's still way too many walks out of the bullpen. Way too many walks. Six walks in nine innings, and I know what everyone's saying, and I know that there's this debate. I saw the debate on X. Oh, when you have stuff and it's filthy and you're getting a lot of swings and misses, you're going to walk batters. I get all that. But guess what? Elite relievers with elite stuff command their pitches, control their pitches, and throw strikes. And, you know, I'm not asking for one walk per nine innings. Heck, you get this down to three, 3.5 per nine, fine. But when it's 4, 5, 6, which right now it's 6 per 9 for the bullpen, way too high. You will have issues against a team like the Dodgers, against a team like maybe Atlanta on the road, a team like Philadelphia. I'm not saying the Astros are a slouch, not a terrible offensive team, but you can navigate some of those walks, especially at the bottom part of their lineup. You may be able to handle that a little bit better. So to me, the big stories this weekend were Griffin Canning and Tyler McGill. Because when you look at the big picture, the Mets could have went out there and they could have scored 6 runs per game, still lost 2 out of 3, and you wouldn't feel any better. And actually, I'll tell you what, you would be much more concerned than you were today. Because I am not concerned right now about the offense, because at the end of the day, if you believe Brandon Nimmo is going to have a 27 OPS plus and Pete Alonso is going to have a 36 OPS plus and Francisco Lindor is going to be a negative 75 OPS plus for a long stretch of time, then worry about the offense. But with the history they have at the front of the baseball reference page or the back of the baseball card, that's not going to happen. But when you see a Tyler McGill and you see a Griffin Canning get the Mets into the sixth inning, competitively shut down a pretty good offense, which, by the way, getting a big out against a Yordan Alvarez, one of the most impressive things, and I wrote about this over Beyond the Mic in a piece about McGill called McGill Rising. One of the more impressive things of the weekend was when McGill was in trouble on Friday and Yordan Alvarez was up. He was able to get the sacrifice fly. Quietly, and I know the guy's not a two-way player, less so than Soto, but quietly, that guy is every bit the offensive player that Judge and Soto are. I mean, look at the numbers. Go to Fangraphs. Look at the run creation. Especially, and he's one of the best hitters in baseball right now. That doesn't get talked about, maybe because he's not a two-way player. And the way McGill navigated the lineup, the way his stuff played. You know, Canning doesn't have as good a stuff. McGill's throwing everything at a high level. He's mixing up his pitches. He's no longer a fastball changeup type guy. He's not a two-pitch guy. He's not a guy that you're saying, okay, could you just sweat through fastball location? I mean, he's throwing multiple pitches really, really well. And at a high level, I mean, a fastball, a four-seam fastball that's right up there with the best in the game. Griffin Canning, again, another really good outing. You know, went a little bit deeper than McGill. Took a tough loss. I mean, the Mets put up a crooked number of like 3 or 4 runs. Canning probably gets the victory. And, you know, right now, and I don't know how he's going to sustain it out of the rotation with throwing 55% of his pitches for sliders. I mean, the fastball is what he got. The fastball is what he gave up, I believe, the home run to Pena. The fastball is very mediocre. The fastball is very average. When he uses his fastball, it has to be very, very located. It has to be in the right count. And it has to be you have to be real careful against the big hitters in the lineup because that thing could go a long way because it's very below average. But I don't know if he can sustain out of the rotation over and over throwing sliders at 55% of the time. But, you know, if he can, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's going to be up there with slider usage with a Dylan Cease and with Max Fried and things like that. Now, I know it didn't go great for Clay Holmes. A little bit too many walks. And it goes to show you when the bell rings, spring training is, you know, a situation where you can't, I mean, you can look at process stats, which we did most of the spring with the pitchers, with the pitch FX stuff, the stuff plus stuff. But until you get to the bright lights. But again, I don't think he pitched terribly. I don't think it was a situation where you go, yuck, this guy doesn't have it. I think he, you know, the walks did him in. His command wasn't there. I mean, he even admitted, and Andy Martino talked about this during the post game, that, you know, maybe he could have done a little bit different with his pitch mix. So I think the fact that you have guys in the rotation that aren't even your big guys, they're not Senga, they're not Peterson, who had a big year last year. You're nowhere near Manaea right now, and we don't know when we're going to see Montas. You're talking about going into Houston and basically guys that were considered maybe not even your top five going into spring training. You're 5 and 6 in McGill and Canning Griffin. Holmes, Griffin Canning, I'm sorry, I'm going to get that botched for a while, guys. Just, I don't, it's kind of like Griffin Canning, Canning Griffin. Like, it's one of those kind of names where you're like, okay, what? What's the first name and what's the last name, right? So Griffin Canning, blam, there you go. And Clay Holmes, let's face it, when he was signed, we were like, what? And they were like, well, we'll see what the situation is. And maybe if it doesn't work out, he goes and becomes a 1A closer for Diaz. You know, you go in and you hold the Astros to 5 runs. I mean, the Mets scored what? 4 runs? 5 runs. I mean, it was a 5-5. I mean, they gave up 5 runs. They scored 5 runs. That's impressive from guys who were not expected going to spring training to be your top of the rotation guys. I mean, maybe as the spring developed, you had some more hopes for Holmes. But I think that's a positive thing. And if this team is going to go anywhere, it's going to require them getting 6 innings and quality 6 innings. 6 innings, 2 or 3 runs from their starters. It's just simple as that. They're not a team that right now, even if the offense is clicking, where they're going to play slow pitch softball and win. I don't see that as their team. I think they're a team that, you know, Stearns has built with some solid defense up the middle. I think they have enough offense. I'm not sure. I can't say they're a bully offense until I see guys develop a little bit. I think if they're going to become a bully offense, it's going to require offense from second base, whether that be McGill or Beatty. I think you're going to have to see Vientos continue to be who he was last year or better. You're going to need Nimmo and Alonso to be who you expect them to be. Maybe not career year version, but at least what the back of the baseball card says. Well, you know, that's a different conversation. But if you can navigate, I mean, here's the weekend when the Mets hit Bupkis. They were in every game. And I'm not trying to be Pollyannish here. I'm just telling you how you evaluate the situation. They were in every game on the road, tough place to play, a team that some believe is going to win the AL West, a team that's a World Series champion not too long ago. I know that they've had some changes there, you know, with free agency and whatnot. Verlander's not there anymore. Bregman's not there anymore. But still a solid team, solid lineup. And you were able to, you know, a couple of big plays here or there on offense, and the results today might be different. We might be talking about a 3-0 Mets team. So I always like to reframe it. I know that you're probably feeling like, and I don't know how, it's always the loud minority that emails me, tweets at me, things like that, and likes to kind of, you know, a lot of the times I think it's like Yankee fans that do it, to be honest with you. But there's Mets fans who like to sit around and wait for the roof to cave in, because it's so much easier to be a fan that way. And, you know, away you go on that. So, to me, the way the weekend went, it was disappointing, but there was a lot of positive signs. I think the things that were negative are the most correctable out of everything. Everybody in the bullpen, and like, let me, and I'll wrap up before I take a break, because we're going to announce, this is where, like, the baseball season being what it is, like throwing midweek in March. Like, we, you know, I didn't even get a chance to do our Darren Reed Award for spring training. We'll do that on the way out. We'll announce who won the Darren Reed Award. And taking away the walks out of the bullpen, you do have to feel good. Diaz's velocity was up. He was able to navigate a clean ninth inning. He didn't dominate. He struck out one batter, but he was able to get some soft contact. So that was good. Brazenban, who I was very critical, I thought was going to be a bigger part of the deadline deal and disappointed last year. Gave some good bridge innings to keep the Mets in the ballgame on opening day. Reed Garrett, who I predicted would be the breakout candidate this spring, big performance in the sixth inning with a, you know, acute, you know, I don't mind walks. Like, being careful with Yordan Alvarez is fine, but not letting expire on the two big strikeouts by Reed Garrett, that's something to watch, because right now it looks like the nine out high leverage relievers are Minter, Stanek in some 7-8 order, and of course Diaz. I wonder if Garrett throws himself into that conversation. Max Kranich, very impressive, getting a couple big outs with Yordan Alvarez popping out where the game could have gotten totally out of reach last night. We've always said that this spring his pitch FX numbers are through the roof. We're excited about him. And look, even Danny Young with a halfway decent inning over here. And Jose Buto doing what he normally does. And now, because I think he has, and we'll see how he's used this year. I mean, he's got a day off today. What kind of recovery time he needs. That was one of his issues last year. You know, he's able to keep the Mets in the game when they're down. So the way I look at the bullpen, still a little concerned with the walks. A third of the walks came from Buto. You know, I'm not crazy about both Minter, and I think he got jobbed if you look at the umpiring scorecard on the one walk he did. And Stanek, you know, his walk, you know, maybe I could quibble a little bit about that. But I feel so much better about this bullpen, and this bullpen doesn't even include Deniel Nunez right now. I mean, and we'll see, because we have some guys with options. When Blackburn is healthy, what are they going to do with Blackburn? I think that'll be interesting, because you don't want to give away an arm, especially an arm that could start. You're always one injury away from a problem. But right now, everybody, I mean, there is not a guy in this bullpen that they bring in that I go, oh, there's no trash arms in this bullpen. And if the Mets pitching lab, which we've talked about all offseason, can produce an opening act of really high performances, high-level performances by McGill and Griffin Canning, the only thing you could quibble about with McGill is not getting through the sixth, and that's the next step. The only pitcher that disappointed this weekend was Clay Holmes, and he wasn't awful. He just wasn't great. That is a huge opening act for this club. And if they're in every game, if this team is going to be within a run or two, one way or the other in every game, they're going to win a lot of ball games, because they got a good defense. They got guys with one swing of the bat who could wreck a game. You know, even guys at the bottom of the lineup, I mean, I know Siri's going to drive you nuts. I mean, what you saw out of Siri between swinging at pitches out of the zone and then the dynamicism on the base pads yesterday where he manufactured a run, I mean, those are things that the Mets haven't really had over the years. I mean, that's exciting to have the ability with Acuna and Siri. So there's as you look at the team and the opening impressions, I didn't take away a lot of negatives this weekend. It was frustrating to watch them not hit. You have to give the Astros credit on the whole thing, because they got some good pitchers too, and they're an analytics-based team too, and they know what they're doing too. You know, fear not. I mean, obviously, it's three games, so whatever I say here on one way or the other, you could throw that in the garbage. I mean, any of you guys in the audience that are fantasy baseball fans know, when you assess players and you're trying to make additions to your roster, you usually look at the seven-day trend. Like, if you're, at least I'm using CBS here. Now, what is their stats last 7 days? You see guys who pop up having big weeks, and you're like, okay, that's an anomaly. And then you go to maybe like more of a, you know, long range for the year, short range for a month or 2 weeks, whatever, you know, whatever you do. And you see how the small sample size gets weeded out. So anyway, that's opening impressions of the 2025 Mets. Day off today, on to Miami to complete the road trip. At this time next week, it'll be Citi Field and the home opener against Toronto. I wonder if Max Scherzer, who is, I thought was scheduled to pitch opening day against the Mets, it looks like he's gotten some lat issues. Looks like Mad Max's body's just finally breaking down with that mechanics and the long amount of innings that he's had, long career amount of innings. I guess I'm not surprised, so we'll see where that goes. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and wrap up with who impressed this spring, didn't make the roster, who won the Darren Reed Award. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Remains back at double play depth with the bases loaded and nobody out. Now the breaking ball in the air to left field. That's going to run in at least. That goes to Noha at the wall, and it's out of here. Alexander Canario unloads a grand slam, and it's 6-1 New York. talked about Canario's power.
All right, we're back. Final thoughts. So, again, this is always what you would rather do, maybe before the season award. You know, who is like the player to watch. The Darren Reed Award, as you guys know, Darren Reed was a, and I'll explain it for those who maybe have not heard it before, but he was an outfielder in the 80s, early 90s that routinely would have big spring trainings, never make the club. Sometimes you'd question why, because he looked like he was a guy that really could fit and had some good minor league seasons, but something always bad happened. Either he was the odd man out, he was back then it was 24, 25 men, and he would either be the 25th or the 26th guy. And then he gets an opportunity. I think he was hit by a pitch and broke his hand. You could go back into the archive at some point over at Beyond the Mic, and I've interviewed him on the old 1240 AM WGBB, and he talked about making a big league club and some of the frustrations. It's actually quite an interesting listen, and maybe we'll put it up someday again. I don't know how much of the archive is available to the subscribers. I'd have to look into that when it comes to that, because, you know, Substack's more of a snapshot in the moment. But this spring, there wasn't really that many offensive options. Brett Beatty obviously would have been one, and it would have been really interesting how, if McNeil had stayed healthy, how that would have went down. And on the pitching side, here's the really big positive, I think, for the Mets on the pitching side. And it's particularly in the bullpen. We don't know about Sproat and Tidwell. Those guys are going to have to develop. And right now, with Blackburn and potentially Montas and obviously Minaya on the horizon, you have maybe enough pitching depth early to be okay. I mean, again, we all know you're going to probably need about 10, 11, maybe 12 starters to get through the season. But on the bullpen side, especially if bullpen gets a little overworked at times, you need to shuttle. There were some guys who actually, and I'll get to that first before. Now, none of these are going to be the Darren Reed Award, but whether it be Chris Devinsky, a veteran who has had some big years for the Astros, looked pretty good during spring training. You had a guy named Traylon McLaughlin, who is a name to watch. Rico Garcia, scrappy pickup, another name to watch. Justin Hangeman, another name to watch. Tyler Zubar. I mean, in a lot of teams and a lot of Mets teams, bullpens in prior years, Zubar would be 100% in the opening day roster. And then there's Anthony Gose, former outfielder, former top prospect outfielder for the Blue Jays, was rumored to be in the R.A. Dickey deal at one point, lefty, you know, maybe somebody like that. So there is some interesting pitching options. I'm feeling really good after watching spring training about the pitching options. Now, none of those guys were good enough to win the Darren Reed Award, and I think it's fairly obvious who the Darren Reed Award recipient is, and it's a guy that wasn't on the roster until maybe 2 weeks into spring training, only got a small amount of time to prove himself. It was claimed off of waivers, and it'll be really interesting where his career goes, because he's a typical minor league lottery ticket, and that's Alexander Canario. And I'm going to make sure Canario. I pronounced it correctly. I didn't bungle that one. Now, he's a guy that was a top prospect for the Cubs. He was involved in the Chris Bryant trade. And look, it doesn't take a lot of research to know he's a guy that, and you saw him in spring training, he had an OPS over 1,000. He hit three home runs, it looked like. Three home runs he hit. I think he had a grand slam in one of them. His walks were actually up, which was impressive. His on-base percentage was 400. And I think the key, and that's where going down to Syracuse and seeing how he is with his swing decisions, and can he, you know, get himself into hitter counts where you're still going to see a guy like this swing and miss and be susceptible some, particularly to elite off-speed pitches. But if he can get himself into hitter's counts, this is a guy that clearly could do damage with the ball. And he's a guy that keep an eye on, because even though the Mets really don't have any room in the outfield, you have Nimmo and Soto. Nimmo's health is certainly something that's going to come up, I think. And you have Taylor and Siri, who are more component/defensive players. But when it comes to the DH spot, you have Jesse Winker. But Starling Marte is somebody that is making a lot of money. The Mets had him on the trading block. We're not quite sure yet where his ability to handle part-time platoon play is going to be, because that's what he is. He's part-time platoon, maybe subs in the outfield a little bit, but he's not a guy. He's probably going to get just his starts against left-handed pitching. He proved last year he's not really the kind of hitter against right-handed pitching that that could be counted on anymore. We'll see if that is something that changes. But I don't know what the leash is with a player making $20 million like Marte is. But if he doesn't hit, and Canario is showing progress with the process down in Syracuse, and he's getting himself, like he did in the small sample size in spring training, into hitters' counts, mashing the ball, that might be an interesting lottery ticket to put on the big league roster. That would probably require the trading Marte, highly difficult to do with that salary, unless you're going to eat most, if not all of it. Maybe as the year goes on, that will become different. Or dumping Marte like you did Cano a couple of years ago. Now, I don't think you're anywhere close to doing either one of those things. Once you make a commitment to Canario going forward, because he doesn't have options, he's going to have to be on the roster, or else, you know, you're going to have to put him to waivers. And you got away with, and I think that's why they waited so long to expose him to waivers, strategically to have everybody else set their roster, because you have to claim him, put him on your 40-man, things like that. So I think you get one shot at putting him back on the 40-man and seeing what he can do. And if you're going to do that, he's got to play. You know, you're not going to bring him up, just to play for 10 days, get exposed to waivers. That's how you make a bad baseball decision. And I don't think that this front office under Stearns makes those kind of bad baseball decisions. But Alexander Canario, by far the Darren Reed Award recipient, he's a name to watch. I think there's more pitching names to watch than offensive names to watch that could potentially help. Joey Meneses is another one that potentially at some point keep an eye on. We'll see as Alvarez gets healthier. Obviously Hayden Singer now is going to be the first guy that they shuttle up and down. I don't know how they're going to handle the 40-man when Alvarez gets back, but, you know, Hayden Singer seems to be higher on the list than Jackson Reitz or Chris Williams. Who the hell knows what's going to happen with Acuna and Beatty. I mean, basically, both of them are platooning right now. They're both getting extended spring training look with regular season at-bats for maybe as much as a month. And that's big, because you're going to learn a lot. And you don't want to overreact to three games, but, you know, certainly Beatty, who may have given Canario a run for the Darren Reed Award if he was sent down, if McNeil was healthy. Because I don't know if he would have, probably would have been sent down. I really think he would have been sent down if it weren't for, because I just feel like they wanted him to play. I mean, maybe he would have been a backup. I don't know. It's interesting, you know, Acuna, does he need the at-bats in the minor leagues, the whole board comment? I don't know. We'll see. But I think he would have probably pushed Canario if he was sent down for the Darren Reed Award. He was as good, if not better, and had a much larger sample size than Canario during spring training. So, he's pretty much, I think, that's your offensive depth, other than the veterans, like the backup catchers, the Joey Meneses, things like that. It'll be interesting if the Boston Barr, all these kids that you saw in the breakout game, you know, how they develop, Ryan Clifford, how they develop. And I'm sure there'll be more to talk about. But right now, near term, who can help the 2025 Mets near term? I think we kind of, what's in front of the Mets here in terms of options early in the season. So that's how we wrap up the show, the Darren Reed Award. One last thing on the way out. So I'm running a promotion with Substack. Substack has been kind enough to give me some promotional funds here. And I want to be able to offer a 30-day trial for those who are not yet subscribers to the Beyond the Mic. So here's what you do. If you want a 30-day trial to get the premium content and what the plan is, and really you saw what the plan is on Saturday. You know, McGill has a big outing. We're not just going to stop and do a podcast. And sometimes I don't want to wait until Sunday to have, you know, all these things that we want to talk about and opine about and interact about. So the Beyond the Mic, whether it be a video or a written piece, and I'm going to try to mix up the video and written piece a little bit better than I did maybe in the past. We'll see how that works. The reaction, it depends on what my passion is or what my inspiration is to the reaction. Is the reaction a video reaction, or is it more of a well-thought-out long-form or pseudo-long-form written? But anyway, if you email me between now and opening day, that's next Friday, opening day, Citi Field opening day, at Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. And you tell me, this is my email address. I would like a 30-day free trial to try Beyond the Mic. You will get that, but you have to email me You have to be listening to the show. You have to email me between now and opening day Friday. I will give you the 30-day trial. And then hopefully after that, you'll like it enough, whether to subscribe monthly or if you subscribe for the year, you get a nice discount. Again, it's usually less than a cup of coffee a day. I know that it's your hard-earned money. I know you got a lot of bills, and everything that you put into this is supported to support the show in some way, whether it be buying research, a Stathead account, a Fangraphs account, you know, all the different things. I'm not going to Turks and Caicos on the money. Let's put it that way. But I put it back into the show so that we can give back to this community and we can, you know, go out and have fun following the Mets together. That's the point here. Following the Mets together in the brand that I have created, or the style, I should say. I hate the word brand. It's so corny. The style that I have created here to kind of give you my point of view. And we could agree to disagree and we could debate. But at the end of the day, we have a ton of fun together. And we saw that during the run to the National League Championship Series last year. So Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. There's no G in the talking. Email me. For some reason, if you don't get through over email, you feel you didn't get through over email on X at TalkingMets, no G. Say, hey, Mike, I emailed you. Can you please let me know if you got it? So, you know, away we go at that whole thing. So check it out. My free 30 days. Get in touch with me over email between now and opening day at Citi Field on Friday. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Simmons. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Rare day off on a Sunday during the baseball season. Back at it tomorrow, Mets Marlins in Miami. Till then, take care, everybody.